Judge Julie Haskell.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order, please. There are extra chairs if we need to set them up, so. Okay, welcome to the Commission for the Blind, Visually Impaired Commissioners Board Meeting. I think we'll start with the introductions this morning. We just need a name and the city that you're from. And if you're here on behalf of an organization, you could announce that too. But we do need to keep it brief. There are a lot of people and we have a lot of things to get through today.
Yeah.
I'm Julie Johnson. I'm the chairperson of the commission board and I'm from York.
I'm Daryl Walla. I'm a commission board member.
Jimmy Arak, I represent the interests of the American Council of Blind in Nebraska.
My name is Mike Hansen. I'm a commission board member, and I am the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska designee on the board.
I'm Nancy Altman. I am a board member, and I am from Hastings, Nebraska.
Pearl Van Zandt, executive director from Lincoln.
Kathy Stevens, administrative assistant from Lincoln.
Hubert Paulson from Lincoln. I'm doing the recording, and I'm a member of the NFB.
How about front row right behind Hubert?
Katie Redenbaugh, Omaha, ACB. Barbara Epworth, Omaha. I'm from ACB. Representative. Omaha representative.
Carlo. Carlos Servan, Deputy Director, VR Services for the Commission Lincoln.
Jeff Altman, Lincoln, First Vice President, National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska.
Kendra Slavin, ACB, from Omaha, and I'm just plain blind.
Joe Denis, VIPS, ACB, and FB. I don't know who else.
Bob.
What do I tap?
The man in front of you.
Bob.
Right here beside you.
Bob Beaton. Deputy Director of the Commission, Lincoln.
I'm Amy Burrish, President of the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska, Lincoln.
And I'm Shane Burrish, also obviously from Lincoln. I'm a member of the NFB.
And Bob Burns next.
Bob Burns from Omaha with the NFB.
Noah Burrish is also here from Lincoln. He's
Oh.
I'm Cheryl Livingston from Lincoln. I'm the treasurer of the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska.
Oh.
Robert, before we come this direction.
Excellent. Hey, Robert Newman. I'm the new Omaha chapter president, so NFB. So, hi guys.
And then the next two are behind Bob Beaton, and then we can come this way. Is that Katie? Speak up.
Katie Regan from Lincoln, Secretary of the NFB Lincoln chapter.
Is there someone behind Katie?
No.
Okay.
Mark Folger, Omaha.
Thank you.
Catherine Lowe's, National Federation of the Blind, Lincoln.
Crystal Platt, Omaha.
Paul Stebbins, I'm station manager for the Radio Talking Book Service.
Ann Pelican, secretary treasurer for the Fremont ACB group.
Cheryl Lucy, American Council of the Blind, Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska.
Jeanette Hancock, ACB, Omaha.
Howard Compton, ACBN state treasurer, Omaha.
Shirley Allen, State Secretary from Omaha.
Janice Compton, Vice President, Omaha, Chapter of ACBN.
Sandy Alvarado, Secretary, NFB, Omaha Chapter.
Ross Popier, NFB of Nebraska, Board Member, and then NFB Omaha Chapter Treasurer.
Anyone who has not spoken?
I'm Nancy Laurel. I'm the Omaha District Supervisor.
I think that's it then.
Okay. Thank you all for coming. Nancy Laurel, could you tell us about lunch, please?
We have vegetable soup, because not everyone is a meat eater. We have vegetable soup and chili. We have crackers, and we have fruit slices, and then we'll have crystallite iced tea, water, and coffee.
Oh.
When you are ready. Whenever you designate that you want to break.
Okay. Hopefully that will be noon. That's the plan.
Everything's on simmer upstairs, so it won't take long to bring it down.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. Let me see where the documentation regarding the Open Meeting Act rules is available. Pearl, where is that place?
It's behind Kathy,
and it's in Braille and print, if you would like to look at that. And now Kathy is going to tell us about where the board meeting was posted prior to this meeting. I don't know how to word that, Kathy. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the publication.
There you go.
That's it was posted in the Lincoln Journal Star on January 27, 2011. And I have the affidavit of publication here at the meeting. It's in print. We'd be glad to read it to anyone that needs a reader if you'd like to see what it says. And also, wasn't it posted on the website and the state calendar and... did it go to the listserv?
Yes.
So those would all be said as well.
Okay. And
excuse me, Karen Anderson, I just walked in.
Okay. Karen. And there are more chairs if we need to set them up.
So. And I'm from Lincoln NFB
members. Okay. Amy Mason, I walked in as well from Lincoln NFB member.
Excuse me, Madam Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
On the far wall over here behind me, there are chairs, so feel free to come
I've
on around.
I've got two chairs in the corner, two chairs in this corner.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, yeah, on the front table there.
Also,
thank you.
There are agendas.
Oh, Braille and print agendas. Maybe you want to deliver those around.
If we're out, somebody can have mine.
We have plenty.
Oh, I just wanted to offer you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kathy's walking around. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Record announcements about the recordings. The meetings are recorded, and they are available for you to listen to, or anyone who's not at the meeting can listen to them. From the website, meeting minutes are also available there. During the public comment periods, if you wish to speak, that's great. We'd love to hear from you. But you need to wait for a microphone to come to you. And that has nothing to do with hearing you here today. You do still need to speak up so we can all hear you. It's not going to amplify your voice, but it will make sure that it gets on the recording.
Julie?
Yes.
May I just ask if anyone else still wants an agenda, could you raise your hand? Okay, this side of the room.
I have print agendas now.
That's fine.
Somebody needs Braille, I'll give mine up. I'll be the sacrificial lamb. I'm all about accommodation.
Okay, public comment time. We do have public comments periods scheduled throughout the day. As time allows, I will allow people to make comments. We need to keep that orderly. I need to have a name, and then I will call on you in the order that you wish to speak. If you've had a chance to speak once during a public comment period, and there are a lot of other people that wish to speak, I will probably not call on you a second time. In the interest of allowing everyone to have an opportunity. Are there any other announcements from any of the commissioners, Pearl or Kathy? Okay.
I have a question to Kathy when she sits down.
Okay. Okay, more agendas. Do we need more chairs? Are we okay with the...
Yeah, there's a handful still empty.
Okay. Okay, Pearl, whenever you're ready, then, we can begin with the focus topic for today, which is the state plan.
Actually, first, do we need Jim ahead of the question? Oh. Plus, we need the minutes.
The minutes.
Should we take Jim's question first?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, very quickly, Kathy, you had mentioned that where you posted the meeting announcement, which is fine. Did you also send a copy of that to the World Herald?
No, I did not. It's only required by state statute that it's printed, published in one legal newspaper in Nebraska.
Okay. Might I suggest that if it's going to be, if we're going to meet, let's say, in Norfolk in May and New York in August, not that we consider publishing it in those areas as well if there's no extra cost?
Omaha World Herald is generally quite a bit more expensive than the Lincoln Journal Star to publish it, and that's why we've usually published it in Lincoln Journal Star in order to meet the statute.
No, that's fine. I can appreciate that. I was just figuring, you know, just to spread the word, you know, publicly, you know, so that, whatever works is fine.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that would be considered a community event, but in York, you can post community events in the newspaper for free. So if they'll consider it a community event, it would be easy to do. Any other questions, comments from Commissioners Pearl or Kathy? Okay, so we're ready to approve the meeting minutes from the November meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Let's do roll call. Mike?
Yes.
Jim?
Yep.
Daryl?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
And I'll say yes. So the meeting minutes from November are approved. Those minutes are available on the website if you would like to look at those. We have all reviewed them and approved them before they actually are posted. Okay, Pearl, I think we're ready for you now.
All right.
You want to read the agenda first?
Oh, are we supposed to, or can we just skip it?
Everybody has one. I think we'll just move along.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Fine.
So you're ready for me to
begin? Yeah, I think so.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, the state plan is our topic for today. That is a document that we write every year to comply with federal regulations. The Rehab Services Administration, RSA, puts out the requirements each year, and then reviews what we submit and sometimes works with us on changes they want to see. And eventually they approve it, and then it goes for the upcoming federal fiscal year. So that's what we're gonna talk about today. Let's see. The instructions for the plan, the most recent one was put out March 1st, 2010. We do have word that we'll be getting new instructions, but we don't have those yet. So we go ahead and move forward with the old instructions, and then when we get the new ones, we'll see what's different. They are quite lengthy, but a lot of it has to do with parts of the law. The Rehab Act itself are pulled out and put into what's called a preprint that every state agency has to go through and confirm, yes, we're going to do this this year. Yes, we have that capacity. Yes, we... So basically, item by item from the law, the certifications that the agency is going to comply with the way the law is set up. And so that's kind of where it starts. There's a lengthy section of the plan each year that's called the preprint, as I said. And, I don't know how many pages it is, but it's long.
The whole state plan is 93 pages.
Right. The whole state plan is 93. When you get into the sections of the plan, there are of the preprint, there will be some wording, and then there will be something that requires an attachment. And then those attachments follow the preprint part, where you're in the preprint, you're just saying yes and no, and you're giving the, if it's the state treasurer that does a certain thing, or the auditor, there's different things in according to your state that you have to fill into the preprint. But then when you're done with that, you get into what's called the attachments. Each year, there are some attachments that are required every year, that every state has to rewrite that section and make sure that it's current to the current year. Then, if there's anything that changes in your agency or your state that is not a required attachment, you are required to know what that was and to write a new attachment on that particular topic. And then there are some attachments that you have to redo if it's a certain change or not. I hope that makes sense. It's bureaucracy. Probably one of our least happy or least interesting topics, but they're really important. And one of the big premise throughout the law and throughout all the years is that the state plan cannot just be written and signed up and tied in a bow by a bureaucrat in a locked office. It has to be brought to the public. You have to do public forums. You have to find out what the public is thinking. And in the old days, and this is still actually how most state agencies do this, they bring boxes of the plan. They post a meeting. They have a meeting. They bring the plan. And they say, okay, open for discussion. What do you all think? Well, typically nobody showed up. And typically those who did really weren't commenting on the state plan. They came for a specific issue, like I can't get my child into my local school. Sometimes the issues were relevant, but a lot of times they weren't. So what we started doing years ago was, first of all, the plan is on the website. The plan is available to whoever wants it. A lot of the content stays relatively the same. There's certainly consistency over the years, but then there can be changes as well. And you know that I and others of our staff go to the meetings of the consumer organizations. We go to other gatherings of consumers. And we basically, throughout the year, we ask people, what do you think about the way we're doing business? And then, as you all know, you tell us. And so, what works to fit in, you know, we make changes in terms of what it is. Are we going to focus more on technology? Typically, transportation is a big thing that's brought up at public forums. I haven't used that term, but that's the term for taking these things to the public. Transportation is a big deal, but is it something the agency can really fix? Not really. Certainly not the statewide, the whole transportation system. We try to find ways that we could be involved at some point, and with some individualized cases, we pay for transportation according to that particular plan, and so on. But sometimes an issue that is an important issue is brought up again and again, but isn't necessarily something that the agency itself can do, you know. So anyway, that's just kind of to give you the idea of how it all works. We do encourage people to read the plan and keep up with it, and aside from the public meetings or forums, then we also are definitely welcome to, or open to hearing ideas and thoughts throughout the year from individuals. So those are the ways that we here in Nebraska bring the public input into the process of writing the plan. And Julie, is it okay if I just ask for questions along every?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm,
so
definitely.
As I'm working through this, please let me know if you have a question about a particular point, or if you you know, want to make a comment or whatever. Okay, so that's kind of the basic. We do now have to do it all online, and that ends up being disjointed in a lot of ways. You know, when you're writing text and then you have to take sections of it and plop it into a field of this online system, you don't end up quite with a full document like we used to. You do, but then when you print it out from, or try to save it from the online application to a document that real people can read, it's cumbersome, let me just say that. So we do our best. So then, I just want to read you the main the attachment list, which are the things that they want to hear. The Rehab Services Administration, they want to know what the state agencies are doing on these things. So, input of State Rehab Council. I'm not going to read the numbers. They're like attachment 4.2C, 4.7B3A1. So I'm just going to read the names of the attachments. Input of State Rehab Council, which, by the way, on that one, we are required every year to do that one because we have to confirm that we are a freestanding commission. We have a board of consumers who are the governing board of the agency. Therefore, we don't have a State Rehab Council. So with that one, we have to confirm every year. Request for waiver of state wideness. That's if we were wanting to do some part of services that we absolutely could not provide in Omaha. We're going to do it in the Panhandle, but we can't do it in Omaha. Then we would have to request from the feds a waiver, because we're required. Whatever we provide has to be statewide. So anyway, we don't require a waiver of statewideness because the services we provide are available to everyone in the state and throughout the state. Okay, cooperative agreements with agencies not carrying out state activities under the statewide workforce investment system, coordination with education officials, cooperative agreements with private nonprofit organizations, arrangements and cooperative agreements for the provision of supported employment services, comprehensive system of personnel development, statewide assessment, annual estimates, state goals and priorities, order of selection, goals and plans, or order of selection, that's jargon, so I'll, that's for if your funds are not adequate to serve all applicants to the agency, then you have to have a waiting list and an order of selection. And we have not had to do that. But if we were under order of selection, we would have to write out exactly how we would be doing that. Goals and plans for distribution of Title VI Part B funds, state strategies, evaluation and reports of progress, quality, scope, and extent of supported employment services. Those are the attachments. So that gives you an idea. It really kind of encompasses all the aspects of what the agency does with regard to vocational rehabilitation and supported employment. The state plan does not address older blind services or independent living. So that's done separately. Okay. Every year, the ones that must be submitted are the staff training, that's the comprehensive system of personnel development, the annual estimates, how many people do you think you're likely to serve next year, what kind of a ratio of staff to clients will that be, goals and plans for distribution of Title VI Part B, that's the supported employment part, and then evaluation and reports of progress. So those are required every year. We also must actively consult with the director of the client assistance program, Vicki Rasmussen, to see if there are things from it, complaints that she might have had the past year, which might be relevant to the writing the plan for the next year. And of course, we are in constant communication with our CAP program. We have to certify that we're not going to do any lobbying. The state plans for all agencies are available on the federal website. And so if you wanted to compare after you finish reading ours and you still can't sleep, you can go online and read some other state plans. And so that basically tells you how it all works and what's all involved. I think at this point I'd like to see if you have questions or want me to talk about specific parts or, anything like that.
I do have one question. You said that there's a provision in there that we certify that we will not do any lobbying.
Right.
To what extent? Because I know that we do lobbying.
Well, the agency doesn't lobby. We educate.
Okay.
Semantics. Well, it's a matter of semantics. It really is.
It is, but it's a legal difference.
Okay. It's a legal loophole.
And agencies, state agencies, government officials, can and, in fact, must answer questions that senators might have, talk with policymakers, whether it's senators, governor, whatever, about what we do, why we do it, what the law says, and so on.
Okay.
When you get into lobbying is when you say, will you support this?
Okay.
So when somebody from the agency, or actually let me phrase that, so when somebody who works for the agency shows up and for whatever reason to, I got to figure out how to word this.
How about if I?
Go ahead.
There are times when people who work for the agency and are active in another organization, in a consumer organization, do go to their senator and say, I'm here on behalf, I'm not here in my role, I'm not on the job, I'm here as a consumer, I'm here as a person who lives in this state, and I'm telling you about this bill or this budget, Senator, will you support it? Yes,
so
that happens all the time.
So when they do that, then they are using vacation time?
Yes, they are.
Okay, I wanted to clarify.
Vacation, or maybe they're on flex, but they're definitely not on the clock. And so far as I know, the folks who do that are very much aware and very clear with the senators about what their role is.
And that's no different than if I want to lobby for, as a member of the Education Association, if I want to take time and lobby for an increase in teacher's salary, but I'm not representing OPS.
Right.
That's when I'm doing
right.
That.
Okay.
So I think it's a pretty clear distinction.
Well, you know, I just wanted to clarify. Just public perception. It's all about perception.
Yeah. Well, it's all about clear articulation, I would say.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Pearl, I would just for clarification, when you submit this state plan, are there times that the RSA decides that maybe you didn't word this right or that right, or they didn't like what you had to say, so did you have to go back and redo the...
Frequently.
I just wanted to get across that, you know, once you get done with it and you think it's perfect, you know, other entities will decide, no, it's not really perfect.
Right. Go ahead.
So it's a lot of, I know that it's a lot of work and a lot of getting it together and getting it together right.
Right. And it might seem like, well, gee, just go through and change the dates. You know, everything stays the same. It's not a big deal. Just go in and search for 2010 and replace it with 2011 or whatever. But Nancy, your point is very well taken. They really do look at it closely, and we, you know, we're always looking at how we do things and how we can improve our services to blind clients in Nebraska. So over the years we've had different federal people to work with. Some are more amenable than others. And so sometimes they'll just kind of come in with a machete and tear the whole thing up and say, substance and some of it's not. And sometimes they want you to make changes that really are not what we're going to do. The whole thing of personnel development. RSA has wanted... at least previous, it's maybe changing a little bit, but that in order to work with a rehab agency, you must have your master's degree in rehabilitation counseling, at least to be a rehab counselor. Well, there's no school in Nebraska that offers a master's degree in rehabilitation counseling, nor a bachelor's for that matter. I don't think there's any even in the Midwest, if I recall. Not one college that will educate a person to be a master's in rehab counseling. So if we went completely by that, then we wouldn't have any rehab counselors because we couldn't hire anybody because nobody applies. We've got, I think, two people on staff who do have master's degrees in rehabilitation counseling. So it's not that we don't want to hire those people, it's that they don't come into the door. Okay, so then the law says, or the highest in the state. And so anyway, it's kind of long deal, but what we ended up doing the year before, is that in this case, we, the agency, did work with senators on a bill to develop a state law for certified vocational rehabilitation counselor for the blind. It's specific to Nebraska. It is a rigorous certification. You have to go through 4 months in the training center as well as keeping things up, ongoing continuing education. And it fits what we do, which is we grow our own, and that's kind of what we always did, but the certification makes it more rigorous and makes it it was legal before, but it makes it mandatorily legal. I'm not getting the right word there, sorry. But anyway, so that way then we were able to show the feds, look, there's almost nobody with a rehab master's here. But people can be hired and then go through this training process and become certified as a VR counselor for the blind. And so the feds approved that, that's fine. And so what we do each year in that section is write about the law, write about the staff we do have and, you know, what they, you know, how they are qualified. So that gives you an example.
Vocational rehabilitation services, they serve thousands of people, you know, who aren't blind, have other disabilities, and I'm sure none of those people, well, they wouldn't have access to any rehabilitation counseling degrees either, so they must have to do something.
Yeah,
too,
the general agency, Voc Rehab in Nebraska, they require master's degrees, and maybe so. It's been a while since I've looked at exactly what they do. Somebody else here know exactly what general agency does? For one thing, they paid more than we paid, and we, with the help of our original commission board, worked to upgrade all of the, our positions, which helped. I think theirs is just a master's, maybe master's.
Yeah, they just have a master's, but they don't have, like,
yeah,
what I'm
they,
saying
they
to
have
say
the
is,
same problem.
Yeah, they,
because
so,
there
yeah,
are
not,
very few.
We're not getting any special treatment or anything like that is what I'm trying to say, because there's no vocational rehabilitation counselor, master's, or
right.
some kind of, you know, so
right.
so they're in the, you know, all the agencies are in the same thing. If we didn't have some standards that we could look at besides a master's, then we wouldn't be able to serve clients. Nobody would.
Right. Okay.
I'm also curious about one of the sections said that you need to tell them how many people you think you're going to serve.
Yes.
I'd be curious, you know, I can understand if you, you know, if you have a wage, you can budget how much your wages are. I mean, for an individual person, you can say, well, I think I'm going to make X thousand dollars this year, so I can budget in the car payments and the house payments and blah, blah, blah. But how do you, you know, come up with people? And what happens if you fall short or have, you know, way more?
Sure. Those are good questions. For a lot of years, it was pretty typical that each year we would serve a little bit more than the previous year. You know, that the numbers would grow a small percentage. And so for a long time, I wrote the plan based on just, you know, bump it up a little bit. It's not scientific. I mean, it's a little scientific, and we know that we can look at prevalence of blindness and if are we getting increasing numbers of blind people who, not that we can serve all the blind and visually impaired, but is it more likely there will be more applicants?
You looked at trends and came up with a number.
Right. So looking at trends, coming up with a number. more recently, the last few years, our numbers have sometimes gone down. And so I know for sure the last couple of years as I looked at it, I didn't just increase it a little bit because maybe we were took a dip and then went back up a little bit. And so I think, if I can remember last year, I kept it kind of the same. But each year what I do is look at how many have we served total each year, like for the last several years. And then I try to come up with what I think based on what staff in the field are telling me, because they'll tell me we're getting a lot more referrals, say, in an area, or referrals are really down in a different area. And so, and of course, that sort of thing we look at all the time to try to see if there's something we need to be doing differently to make sure we're trying to serve the people that are there. But that also gives me some ideas that, okay, yeah, it's been stagnant for a while, but now we're getting a lot of more referrals, so I would increase the number in the plan. We have not always met the exact number. We've either gone over or gone under, but never have I had one of the RSA people come to me and say, hey, you didn't make your estimate. What's wrong? Now, they do judge our, where there's standards and indicators that the federal people have set up. And that's, well, it is addressed in the state plan when we, in the sections on progress and also goals. There are standards that each agency is required to do certain things with, and one of them is number of people's, not really numbers served, but number of successful cases. That's just one example. So if you fail on those standards, then there is the potential you could lose funding. And of course, they don't jump in and take your money first. They jump in with, what's wrong with you people? Why aren't you doing it right? And what can we do differently? And so, but the threat is definitely a real one if you were to continuously fail at your standards.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it sort of like when they audit for special ed, like in public schools? I mean, you have time to, like a year, or I don't know how much time exactly, but to make a plan and rectify the situation before they...
Yes, they call it a something improvement plan. I don't remember.
Yeah, I know, but you do have,
A number of years ago, when the feds monitored us and they came up with some improvement things we needed to do.
Performance, I think it was.
Performance.
Okay. That sounds right. It sounds familiar.
So, you know, we worked with them and made some changes and such. And so...
How often do they come in to review the program?
Okay. That gets into the federal monitoring system. And... there has been a major change in the administration of the rehab program. There's a lot of new people there. and they are working to change their whole review system. For a long time, it was supposed to be about every year. And then it was about every... But then they'd come in and you'd have to... you know, have everything in the moment's notice that they were there, and then you wouldn't get the review till 3 years later.
Oh.
Seriously. So that has been very frustrating for people. But there is a new plan now for rolling out the state reviews, and we are scheduled for 2012.
Yeah, that was an email this morning.
But it also said in that the states that are being reviewed in 2011, after that's done, the feds will reassess and see if they need to change anything about the way they're doing business. So that might change the calendar going forward. A really good thing now is that the new commissioner of rehab services was director of a state agency. So she knows how frustrating it is to, you know, have to go through all these hoops. We're glad to do the stuff, to get the work done, to comply with the law and all that. But when it got to be just really artificial hoops that were being put up to make people jump through, that's very frustrating. And it doesn't get the services provided. So I think she will make some very good changes.
With the technology, I know I know this is oversimplistic, I guess, but with the, you know, the whole idea for going to public-wide, like special ed files in our schools and so forth, and now you're online with the, you know, state plans and different things, aren't they just able to, like, red flag something, and because these flags always pop up and just say, fix this or that? Won't they be able to make it a lot of simpler process without having to do all these meetings and plans, or you know what I mean? If can't they just send something back to you and say you need to change this part?
When have you known the feds to simplify anything, Daryl?
Well, that's what's happening with us too. I mean, with the schools, and it's become more cumbersome.
You know, what works well from my perspective is when the actual people, and I don't care if they call me or email, is fine, but when they communicate with us and say, I mean, if they just said, you have to change this.
Right.
And it has to be like that. Then that's not as helpful as if they sit down and say, you know, tell me what you meant by this, or how is this getting, this point A getting us to point B in terms of rehab. And then we can talk and we can say, here's what I meant. And then they, oh, okay, well then could you change the wording? So, and then we can come up with what really helps. Sometimes it's not just the wording, and things maybe should be different. One year when the monitoring people came in and we were showing them everything we do, they were just appalled that we had so many programs, too many programs, they kept saying, and thinking that that detract from rehab services. And the point we were making is, it is rehab, sir. You know, these programs that we have for the kids, for the teens, for adults in the group teaching, it's a program. Yes, it takes staff time, but look at what people learn, and then they can move forward. So that's, to, you know, when we can sit down and talk about it, and they can say what they're thinking, and we can express, you know, and I'm not saying we never learn from them. They give us some ideas that we can incorporate, or... But that was an example of, I guess, one that was frustrating, where it seemed like they were just saying, cut the programs, and we weren't going to do that. We did start really looking at, we know, we believe these things are effective, because we see those kids 10 years later, you know, or we see these adults who haven't been able to get a job, and now they're working. And so, but we... That's all kind of, it's not quantifiable. So we've started really looking at how can we really quantify the results. And our eForce system is going to help move us toward being able to really see. You know, we really track the center numbers. And we know over all the years since we began tracking, which is about 15, 16 now, we know what percentage are working or completed their employment goal. But in general, we don't necessarily, we haven't had the numbers about, of kids that come to Winterfest, how many end up being winners, you know. So we know they do, but we want to quantify it because that's what means something to the federal people and really to state as well. I mean, it helps to really have that quantified.
How is successful employment measured? I mean, are we talking about at the time of the case closure? Does it matter if they quit their job and do nothing 6 months later and never get another job? See, to me, that doesn't seem successful.
Right.
But I'm guessing that that would be counted.
No. It's not just at the time they get their job.
Okay.
The specifics of it, Carlos, can you tell me? It's there's a certain period of time.
At least 90 days after. At least.
And then we follow up to make sure they're, you know, if sometimes they get a job and things are going fine, but then there's something with technology or something that either the person or the employer needs our consultation on to make it continue to be successful.
Right.
So we stay in touch on those things.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, you could argue even after 90 days, then sure, sometimes people lose their jobs, but we really do try to, you know, do the things so it can be for the long term and not just a short-term job.
Right. So when we talk about successful closures, though, like the statistics that are in this state plan, how many, you know, cases were closed successfully?
I can't hear you.
Okay. When we talk about successful closures for the state plan, we're talking about, I think it's status 28. When is that the right number?
26.
Is that what we're talking about? You know, the case is closed, they have a job, they're successful? Or is
yes.
there...
They get a job. They are have been in that job and continue to be in that job for at least 3 months. And we can go past 3 months as a client if there's some purpose, something in terms of their continued rehabilitation that we think they could use or that the individual is requesting. We can keep them open longer. But if it looks like, okay, it's we've got the employment, we've got the income, we're 3 months into it, and things seem pretty stable, then we can close the case, and that's a successful closure.
Okay.
Howard Compton?
Yes.
Are there other mitigating circumstances that would prohibit you from closing? What I hear you saying is, okay, we rehabbed them, they've gotten a job, 90 days later they're still working, and you say it's a successful close.
Are there other mitigating circumstances that would dictate that it's not a successful close?
Yeah. Yes.
What sure. are they?
Lots. Go ahead, Pearl.
Okay. Carlos, do you want to talk about some examples of how that might be the case?
See, I'm trying to think that.
Well, from just reading the state plan in my own memory, it would have to be competitive employment, which means it cannot be in a sheltered type of workshop. It has to be at least minimum wage. It would have to be 30 hours a week or greater. What other? Are there other criteria? Yeah.
Well, according to the federal, to RSA, a successful closure is anybody who works in an integrated setting and making at least minimum wage. Mm-hmm. But also, homemakers can be successful.
If the homemaker was the vocational goal.
Right, if that's the goal. If somebody has the goal to work only 20 hours and they have some health issues, yeah, that could be successful too. If somebody...
But successful for that person or successful for the number?
I'm just talking about the regulations.
Okay.
Just for that.
Carlos Pearl, are the regulations open to interpretation, the federal regulations? And here's why I ask, and I'm not going anywhere with that, just trying to understand this. What Nebraska may deem as unsuccessful, another state might deem as successful. Do we know why there's a discrepancy in...
I think the RSA determines that. I don't think the individual states get to interpret RSA's rules.
Is that correct, Pearl?
Technically, you can bring that back if you want. Okay. Yes and no. Basically, regulations are regulations. They are law, and states must abide by the regulations. There are some situations where the federal people have said, we're taking this under advisement, we're reviewing this, and states need to present what they're thinking to us. So, but the actual regulation is basically the same as law, and the regulation about employment, the definition of competitive employment is what is in the regulation.
So if I wanted to send somebody to work for Envision, let's use that as an example, and the state of, let's just, not that this is the case, but the state of Nebraska, let's say, determines Envision is not a successful closure. but yet, let's say Missouri. Well, I know where it is, Barb, but this Missouri deems it otherwise. So you're saying if Missouri says to the feds, this is our thought process, then the feds have to stamp their approval on it and go from there.
No, that's not accurate. And Carlos, jump in if
that's
at any
what my
point.
Understanding of what you said was.
Yeah, I know I didn't say it very clearly. One of the things that I want to say is that if a person wants to work at Envision or someplace else, if they only want to work 2 hours a week someplace, if they want to work for their husband and they're not going to get paid any money, and it's going to be 1 hour a day, but that's what they want to do, whatever. If it fits any of those other things that are not defined as competitive employment or not enough hours or not benefits or enough pay, you know, we're still going to work with them and
right.
help them get the skills and training they need. And if they choose to do that, we don't sit on them and say, you have to do
right.
something different.
Right.
If they want to do those things, then we will help them achieve that goal, and the closure of successful or unsuccessful does not change the color of that person's halo.
Right.
It doesn't change the value of them as a person. And you know, so.
Well, make
please,
some
yeah.
And I try to emphasize.
Hang on one second for the.
I try to emphasize what the feds regulate, and that doesn't mean it is, in general, a positive thing to do. For instance, some states don't provide necessarily the best services. They do a lot of homemakers in order to get a lot of successful closures. But they are not getting a lot of jobs. They are getting a lot of successful closures, but not jobs. What we are trying to do here is, even though the feds require something, within the agency, we also have some standards. And Julie mentioned one of those. We look for our counselors trying to motivate them that our clients will look for full-time jobs, which is at least 30 hours per week. And that means anywhere, and at least minimum wage in those 30 hours. Or if you multiply the 30 hours times minimum wage, it comes to close to $270+ per week, I think. If somebody is maybe just working 10 hours a week, but making that much, 270, that also comes to successful in our mind. So in a way, we try to please the feds, their regulations, and the numbers that we use, 26, 20, 28, and most of the time doesn't mean much for our counselors or clients. What matters is the type of quality life they do receive after their case is closed. And I hope that makes some sense to them.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Howard Compton?
Yes, sir.
Just an observation. I know for a fact that some states are saying people that go to work for companies like Envision are successful closers, and they are being reimbursed for the rehab. It sounds like to me that Nebraska is passing up valuable federal dollars by taking the stance that companies like Envision don't meet your requirements, and therefore the state of Nebraska is losing money, federal dollars. So, you know, I think you ought to revisit the issue and maybe change your minds about a successful closure always has to be, quote, competitive employment. I think you ought to challenge the feds on that. And I think you ought, all of you ought to change your minds about it. Thank you.
We do get Social Security reimbursement, excuse me, for a lot of individuals that we work with, and then they achieve competitive employment. So,
Bro, can I make a comment about reimbursement?
Hang on a second.
We get the reimbursement from the Social Security Administration, not from a rehab entity. And the Social Security Administration doesn't care about 28 or 26. They only care about how much the person is making, period.
Yes, thank you.
So if for any reason we place somebody in a non-integrated employment, or the person who works there, and the person is off Social Security benefits, we get reimbursed. And we have. So.
Thank you. I forgot that point. But yes, that's right. We have been reimbursed for
It's a separate process.
It's separate.
Is there any way where we can read this information? Or I'm not that I.
The Rehab Act itself, and then the regulations. I think it's Code of Federal Regulations, CFR 35 something or other. I'd have to check the numbers for you.
If you would, sometime. I just
there are regulations that relate to all of this. Sure, I'd be
not
glad
that I really would have ever wanted to, but. Mm-hmm. Howard does bring up a valid point, you know, to
if you can't
at least familiarize myself with it.
So I mean, yeah, it's a matter. Sounds like it's a matter of interpretation. I spoke with
there's
the hand.
At least one hand up. I don't want to call on people.
Oh, Robert,
so please.
Robert Newman.
Thank you.
Hold just one moment. I think the time is about. The time to move to public comment anyway, so I'm just going to officially, for Hubert's sake, for the agenda and scheduling, we're just going to move right into public comment since it seems that's
awesome. But I just have one little refinement on the Envision, like Nebraska type of jobs, you know, because we know they're real jobs. We know that. We all know that. So, but anyway, just pardon me if some of you guys know it, I'm sure, but, you know, for some of the jobs that, like, blind folks go to work at, like, Outlook, Nebraska. The commission, when I worked there, we did get a 26 for them. It's you like the people in the office doing secretarial things or technical things or other jobs in the office side. You know, it's the protection side is where the little rules get squeezed us because, you know, like 75% of the hours that are put on production, hands-on stuff. Those are protective types of special jobs for the blind. That they'll hire a blind guy over 10 sighted guys that apply. They'll take a blind guy first because they need to keep their numbers up there. But if they're in the office or something, then yeah, we'll snatch up a 26 anytime. The Nebraska would. So just that little refinement there. Mm-hmm. Some of those jobs are 26 qualifications.
Robert, it still sounds like it's a matter. Anyway. It still sounds like it's a matter of interpretation. I talked to the head of the NIB folk here a couple weeks ago, and he told me flat out it's up to state's interpretation of some of this stuff. So Nebraska could be. I don't remember the name of the guy. I can get it to you, but Nebraska potentially is losing out on revenue. Yeah, potentially. I'm not
saying
that.
I don't understand that.
That's not the case.
How are we losing revenue?
Well, the way I understand it's, deeming unsuccessful closure.
Carlos just pointed out that the reimbursement doesn't have anything to do with the 26 or 28.
Okay. Well,
it's
yeah.
based on if the person goes out
right.
of the substantial
SGA?
Gainful activity
right.
and goes off of Social Security right. disability.
No, I can get you the name I got to talk to. That's no problem. So.
Okay. Other questions from commissioners?
This is Bob. I just want to make a comment. I think that at these meetings, generally the public has time to make public comment. There is time reserved on the agenda for that, and I don't think we've been adhering to that today. You know, I think if people have something they want to say, you know, we need to recognize that there is a lot of time for that.
Thank you. I was just going to suggest that earlier, but I didn't want to steal anybody's thunder. But
Pearl, we went around that. Pearl asked for permission to allow comments during
Pearl
her
did,
presentation.
And
oh, did she? Okay.
Yes, just and during the focus topic.
And I stated at the beginning of the meeting that you know, I would allow public comments as time allows throughout the day. And that's fine. You know, we're on schedule, so it's fine. It is the public comment time now, and so it's open to anyone that would like to make a comment or ask a question. It does not have to be about the focus topic or what we've been talking about. It can be on anything that you would like to bring up relevant to NCBVI.
Bob Burns has a question.
Yes, Bob.
Yes, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mike.
That's all right.
No, I asked Bob to wait for the mic.
Oh.
Hi, this is Bob Burns from Omaha. Pearl, what is the state of affairs currently on the feds collecting data from states that are successful and sharing it with, you know, the other states so that, you know, the wheel's not being reinvented? What is the state of that? Also, you mentioned the head of RSA was a former state commissioner. What state was that person from?
She was from Washington, Washington State. Yeah, Washington State.
D.C.
Yeah. Let's see, how shall I answer? Well, do you mean the RSA disseminating the results of the standards and indicators, or do you mean best practice information that's shared?
I would say best practice,
okay.
Finding things that are working and getting
right.
People
yes.
Rehabbed and gainfully employed.
Okay. The federal agency, RSA, does put on almost every year a conference on employment and on where you go to sessions and hear a lot of different ideas about how states are helping people get successful employment. Also, the national meetings that some of us go to twice a year, the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind, is a very good place to hear about what's working well in other states. And then there are journal articles, there are things you can read telling about what states are finding to be helpful. Does that get your question?
Yeah, I guess I would. My question also would go is, do you notice, is that any better, different, or the same as the past?
Oh, well, it's just the changes in the administration there are pretty new. But yes, for example, this past year they had a Randolph Shepherd conference sponsored by Rehab Services Administration, and they hadn't had one of those in 10 years. So that's an example of the feds are saying, now wait a minute, we need these training opportunities. And we did have a number of both staff and vendors attend, and they found it to be very, very informative. So yeah, I think they are trying to make some changes.
I guess to follow up, when I was there, they closed down all the regional RSA centers and moved them all back to Washington. And so
yes.
How that exactly worked out was yet to be seen when I left and really had more in-depth information. How has that worked, and have you noticed any, has Obama administration made any changes or tweaks in that?
Sure. Let me wait till the Hubert's getting his exercise today.
It's part of the state fitness program.
Okay. I wouldn't tie it to the presidential administration, because the changes in getting rid of the regional offices happened before, and so it definitely isn't just tied to the presidential. And when I'm saying administration, and I know I've used that term a couple times, I'm not talking about the president. I'm talking about the administration of RSA itself. Okay? So anyway, when the regional offices were closed, RSA lost a tremendous amount of quality people and knowledge and expertise. And much of that did not just move into the central office in Washington, D.C., the people were lost. And then, and they also lost a lot of really talented, tenured, knowledgeable people in the central office as well. And so, and they did a lot of shifting around. Somebody that was knowledgeable on policy was shifted to grants, and vice, I mean, there was a lot of shifting around. And most of us in the agencies around the country felt like, you know, it was really devastating to the program. Now I think things are looking up. For example, there for a while there was no one assigned to Old or Blind, and no one assigned to Randolph-Shepherd. And then somebody was assigned, but it was with 9 other major programs they were supposed to be in charge of. So it really did cause those changes, you know, whether it's not having offices was the problem, I'm not willing to say, but certainly all the changes that were made kind of in that time were not a good thing. And I think now we've got people in RSA that actually believe in the program and know that it can be successful, and so I think it's more hopeful.
Carlos, hello.
Yes. Got a hand behind me here.
Okay, you have to tell me your name.
Carlos.
Okay, let's wait for Carlos is going to go, and then and Mike, did I skip over you earlier?
No. Bob had asked if he could. You need to wait for the mic, and I said yes.
Okay.
Hubert is begging you to let Cheryl go first so he doesn't have to run twice.
Oh. Okay, ladies.
May I be educated on what Randolph-Shepherd means?
Sure. That's the law that is the blind vendors program.
Of vending machines?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Randolph-Shepherd is vending.
Are you for me?
Yes.
I just want to make an extra comment about the standards and indicators, or the standards that we as an agency have. If I went to a session training in Washington back in September talking about quality assurance, and by talking to one of the statisticians, they were talking about numbers and how other agencies got successful closures and how we, Nebraska Blind, don't get that many. What I talk to him is what I'm going to also tell you. The way how we operate here is if you really look at most agencies, rehab agencies, the substantial gainful activity for other disabilities who are not blind is much lower than those who are blind. I think it's $900. And for the blind, it's around $1,700 now.
That means how much you earn per month,
per
right?
Month. Right. In okay. Other words, if I'm in a wheelchair and make $900, the agency which rehabilitate me will get reimbursed. But if I'm blind and I make $900, the agency doesn't get reimbursed. Now, with that, just a little example. And I don't want to criticize, I don't mean to criticize our sister agency here, but they have way more money than we do for their services and way more clients. Right. And yet, we, the smaller agency, get more reimbursement than they did per year. Mm-hmm. And when we compare also the reimbursement with other state agencies, just blind agencies, and look at our numbers, we also get more reimbursement. So that tells you that the more we invest on clients, the more success we have. And that's how we like to think in regards to success for our agency. I hope that illustrates a little bit more.
And Julie, I have a couple of comments.
Before we get to other people, I have a question. When you say that Nebraska gets more reimbursement from Social Security...
Nebraska Blind, yeah.
Yeah, do you mean individual cases, or do you mean total sum of money?
Total
sum of money. Okay.
But also individual cases, we get more per individual than most agencies.
Okay.
Because we invest more.
Right.
And we get more than, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, but in comparing it with VR, though, I would guess that it's going to cost more, and that's exactly what you're saying in the amount of reimbursement. It costs more to rehabilitate a blind person than it would a lot of other disabilities.
Right, but see, they don't get reimbursed as we do because, again, the jobs that their clients get are a lower level, mm-hmm. or maybe not full-time.
Right.
We have more success rate in regards to the quality job and also the hours worked.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go to Pearl and then Amy.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, Hubert.
We'll buy you some roller skates.
The governor wants all his employees to be healthy.
I do want to say we've been talking both last time and this time about the desire of consumers to have us basically endorse work at Outlook Nebraska, any job at Outlook Nebraska, to be considered competitive employment. At the end of last time, a question was raised, do they have openings that they can't fill? The answer was no. To my knowledge, actual clients that we have, and Nancy can, I mean, I know of clients both from Lincoln and Omaha that we have, that have been interested in Outlook, that we, the counselor has taken there for a tour. I don't always know if the person does or doesn't take a job there, but I'm not aware of any instances where people were wanting to work there and our counselors have said, no, we're not going to take you there for an interview, or no, we're not, you know, we might say, let's talk about what kind of job you want and let's look at all the options and compare what they pay and so on. But Nancy, Carlos, correct me if I'm, and Nancy, I mean Floral, the supervisor here in Omaha, are there people who want to work there and we're discouraging them?
No. I've not had anyone, and they're really good about letting us bring people in and try the job. I know Connie Daly, I'm going to speak for her as well. She's had some people from Lincoln come up. We put them up in a motel. They go and they try the job to see, you know, what it is and what kind of a commitment that they're making for employment. They, you know, Outlook works very closely with us on that.
Thank you. So I wanted to make sure I was telling the truth, but my impression is that we're being asked to call work there successful, and that, you know, we haven't had a lot of people wanting to work there, but when we do, we support it, we work with them, we see if it's an option.
That's correct, especially if that's, you know, and there's the other thing is that we also talk to younger people. One of the things is that we have people that may be interested in working there, but it has to be full-time,
okay.
especially in the production floor. And right now, I don't think anywhere else they have any part-time either. And we do have people that would like to go to school and work there.
Right.
And then I've also been working, you know, we have kind of like an ongoing project that we'd like to get off the ground with them, where we're working with being kind of creative with maybe two part-time people filling a full-time position with some individuals that have some multiple disabilities that have the stamina, that have that kind of goal and interest, so that we're meeting their interests and meeting the needs of the employers and having all the supports in place. But at this point, most of the positions that had come available were the third shift, and, you know, to have support services and transportation for the individuals that we're looking at, it wasn't a good match. And
thank
that was
you.
True for, you know, in talking to Eric and Mark and the staff at Outlook, too.
Thank you. I don't know if there was someone else. That
Amy.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I thought there was anyone.
All right. Thank you very much. Speaking of the budget,
and money concerns. This fits in, I think, kind of with our discussion of the state plan, in particular services to older blind.
Hang on a second. We've got some feedback. Plus, if you could speak up and maybe hold the microwave a little further. A little further from your mouth, but then okay. Speak up.
6 inches.
Okay. How's that?
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, so this is really a budget issue, and I have a letter here prepared that I'd like to read. I'm going to ask Shane to hold this microphone for me. So
this
sounds real good.
Make sure it's 6 inches.
Yeah, 6 inches. He's very mathematically and scientifically inclined, so.
Yeah. And we can get you a tape measure if you want to make sure it's accurate.
Right, get all the details. Okay, and I do have a copy of this, which I'll provide to you as well, Dr. Van Zandt.
Thank you.
February 5th, 2011, Dr. Pearl Van Zandt, PhD, Executive Director, members of the Board of Commissioners, Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, 4600 Valley Road, Suite 100, Lincoln, Nebraska, 68510. Dear Dr. Van Zandt and members of the board, in the year 2000, a change in federal grant structures resulted in a significant surplus of funds available to serve the senior blind living in the state of Nebraska. The administration of the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired made what we believe to have been a very appropriate decision and made a portion of these funds available to nonprofit organizations serving the senior blind here in Nebraska through a grant process. Subsequently, two consumer organizations prepared grant proposals, which after proper review were eventually approved. The National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska was one of these two consumer organizations which received approval for a grant at that time. We are very proud of the work we were able to do and accomplish with these funds, including the founding of a successful computer training program for the senior blind called Computer Options, a valuable leadership seminar held for older blind individuals, which assisted the participants in developing highly effective organizational and advocacy skills, and a scholarship program which gave blind seniors the opportunity to attend a national convention where they had the opportunity to meet and learn from successful older blind role models. A full accounting of these programs and the appropriate expenditures related to these programs was provided to the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired in a timely manner, in keeping with the terms of the grant. These things having been said, we come to a matter of concern that we believe deserves your attention, as well as that of the Board of Commissioners. As we mentioned at the beginning of this letter, a second grant was approved at or near the time the NFBN received approval of our grant proposal. It is our understanding that this grant was received by the American Council of the Blind of Nebraska, a state affiliate of the American Council of the Blind, and was for the intended purpose of creating a statewide system for meeting the critical need for transportation by the senior blind of our state, especially in rural areas. We certainly agree with the decision of the commission in approving the grant for such a worthwhile project. However, our concern arises out of the fact that after nearly 10 years, this project has apparently failed to move forward in any meaningful manner. While we do not have direct access to the records related to this grant or its outcome, it is our understanding that a portion of the grant funds were applied to the two existing Nebraska Council of the Blind sponsored taxi coupon programs, Give a Lift, located in Lincoln, and Share a Fare, located in Omaha. However, the primary component for which the grant was originally approved a system of transportation vouchers to be used to assist blind seniors living in rural areas with the cost of hiring drivers was never actually undertaken. It is our further understanding that a sizable portion of these grant funds is still languishing in an ACBN bank account. We do not wish to suggest, nor do we believe, that there has been any intentional wrongdoing in regard to these funds. However, we believe that incompetence in the management of this grant is highly probable. Given the length of time since the grant was provided to the ACBN and the apparent lack of progress in the reaching of goals of the grant proposal, we believe that a full audit of the grant would be only prudent. In addition, we believe that a period of nearly 10 years should have been more than sufficient to have determined the viability of this program, and therefore any remaining funds along with the interest collected on these funds during this period should be returned to the commission where they could be utilized to the benefit of the senior blind. We respectfully request that Dr. Van Zandt and the Board of Commissioners undertake a full audit of the American Council of the Blind of Nebraska's management of this grant and take a more proactive role in maintaining and managing records for any similar grants or projects given by the Commission in the future, and that the Executive Director insist that the unused portion of the funds, along with any funds utilized for purposes not directly related to the conditions of the grant, be returned immediately to the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. We further ask that the Executive Director and the Board of Commissioners bear in mind the ineffective management of this grant before embarking on future grants, projects, or partnerships with the American Council of the Blind. We appreciate your attention to our concerns, and we look forward to the resolution of this apparent problem. Sincerely, Amy Burrish, President, NFBN. And I thank you very much for the time today.
Thank you.
I will say I knew that NFB was up to something. Amy, had you inquired, and first of all, I have a lot of respect and admiration for you, and I want to put that on public record. Yeah, okay, that's fine. That's fine. I have, as I've always said, and I've said it publicly, I'm going to say it publicly now, I have a lot of respect and admiration for you as a person, and I want to get that out there on the table. I will admit that ACB probably bit off more than we could chew, and I will say that publicly. However, had you inquired, rather than doing this, which you have every right to do, ACB, and Howard, help me out. Help me remember when it was. 2, 3, 4 years ago, when we realized that we were in the situation we were in, we approached Pearl and said we're having some issues with it. Would you have any objection to ACB divvying up the funds between Givelift and Lincoln and Sheriff Aaron Omaha? And I have the letter at home someplace, Pearl. I can dig it out.
No, I know.
She sent back a response and said, no problem. She had no problem with us changing the scope of the grant. Henceforth, ACB considers the matter duly closed.
I have a question. I didn't remember when it was that you sent that request to me. But yes, we had discussion about what was done with the funds, why there's money left, how much is left, and what your proposal was, which I did approve. Have those funds then been provided to Givelift and Sheriff Fair?
Yes. Yes.
Howard Compton.
One moment. I have a question. With the grant that the commission provided 10 years ago or 11 years ago now.
It was 2000.
I can't hear you. Everybody speak up.
With the grant that the commission provided 10 years ago, were there time requirements to fulfill, to spend the money, and were there requirements to provide documentation of what happened, what, where the money was spent?
Bob's raising his hand, Julie.
Yeah, Bob Deaton, who heads the Older Blind Program, can speak to that, but I wondered if, I mean, Howard Compton had a question first. Julie, what's your plan? Up to Julie.
Yeah, I would rather go to Bob first, please.
I can answer the question, too, Julie.
Hang on 1 second.
Yeah, there were, yes, there were time limits. Time constraints built into the grant, timelines in terms of what was to happen and when. So that's one of the things that I feel needs to be cleared up in the letter. The project was, in fact, undertaken. So there were strenuous efforts to get the project off the ground. It was ambitious, basically a statewide program like Amy read, to provide funding for vouchers. People would have to find their own drivers and all that. And there were annual reports of activities for several years after that. I do think that the project was good. It was ambitious in its scope. And I think in several areas, some programs were actually started.
That's correct.
I think maybe Columbus might have been one. In the Scotts Bluff area, the Panhandle Independent Living Program was entered into a partnership. The ACB talked to the director there, and they agreed to administer the program.
And they did for a couple of years.
Yeah. Okay. You know, what they found out and what was the experience elsewhere throughout the state was that this program even though there was some people that signed up, it was underutilized. People just simply were not using it.
That's correct.
You know, they had the vouchers, but people still didn't want to. You know, people still had to pay for part of the thing, and then they had to send in the reimbursement for the driver. But unlike half fare taxi coupon in Omaha and Lincoln, where people are used to the idea of using taxis for different things, people just didn't have that that mindset or that behavior set, and so it kind of dried up on the vine. You know, the program it sounded good, the concept was good, and I think after a while, it just wasn't happening. So
yeah, and excuse me, it's because of those things that Bob has said that we approved the request to give up on the voucher plan and move those funds into the Omaha and Lincoln programs.
Some of those funds were actually expended.
They were.
Right. Like we gave
yes.
money and it just wasn't.
Okay. Were the annual reports that were required by the grant, were those submitted by
yes,
ACBN?
They were.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I needed to know.
Yeah,
okay.
We have those.
Howard?
Yes.
Howard Compton, Omaha. To address the questions that have been brought forth, and being the newly elected or appointed treasurer in 2007.
We wish you had you since 97.
I wish to give you some facts and figures that may help you understand what happened to $50,000 of the grant. That was the total grant. $30,000 of the grant was spent on exploratory investigative work to find clients to use the program in rural Nebraska, which we accounted for. That left $20,000 in reserves that we consistently tried with the independent living centers and were turned down on some occasions. And the last one to accept money from us was the Council Bluffs. I mean, the Scotts Bluff. We sent them $2,500. Because of lack of use, $2,300 of that money was returned back to ACBN. And they have not requested any more funding because they have no clients. All right? That brought us back up to about $20,000. So we began to look for ways to reestablish a program in rural Nebraska, but we could find no ridership. So we made application to Pearl Van Zandt for permission to redirect the grant money into known successful programs, i.e. Give a Lift in Lincoln, which many people in this room use, including NFB members, and which also went to Sheriff Fair in Omaha, which many NFB members used. We split roughly $16,000 of that money between Sheriff Fair and Give a Lift. We reserved $5,000, and when our Fremont chapter opened, we funded $1,000 in preliminary funding to get the CAB program in Fremont off the ground. We still have $4,000 left, which is in reserve and dedicated for any rural, or if we can't find a rural program, then it would be distributed equally between Lincoln and Omaha. I hope this will answer some of the questions about where the money is, where it went to, and I openly support an audit to the best of my ability with the records that I have.
Thank you.
And that's consistent with everything Bob said, but more specific. Thank you, Howard.
I do have one question.
Sure. Mike?
If there, I want to thank Howard. That was an excellent description and very appreciative of how everything came about and happened. If there was, and this is just more of a formality now, if there was a, in the awards letter or however that's normally stated, a time frame stated of when the funds should be used by.
No.
Bob Deaton just said that there was.
In the original grant, yes.
Well, there was in the original thing, but I think, you know, I just didn't feel like, you know, so long as there was effort being used to use the funds, I just couldn't say, you know, give it back, you know, you had enough time to do it, because the effort was still being made.
Okay.
Yeah, and in the Pearl, the letter that Pearl sent us, she didn't say expended by December 31st, 2008, or else we want the money back. That was not in there.
Well, okay. This is Amy. I don't know if you want to object right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to thank you all for the clarification. It's interesting to know, and I appreciate the explanations.
Okay.
Thank you.
I would like to say something too. This is Bonnie Weiland.
I was here first.
And Jay has to.
When we first got the funds.
Who's speaking, please?
Sure. This is Shirley Allen from Omaha.
Thank you.
When the Omaha chapter, or Alton State chapter, first got these funds, we had a gentleman who traveled all over the state who was gathering information from us. And he, which is all on the internet, anybody can go look at the information that Bob Dillis put together. He got us statistics after statistics after statistics, and we paid him for that. Plus, he did more work per hour than we were paying him for, but he got ill, he could not continue, and he's now dead.
Yeah. Gwenny had something.
There's someone over to my right. I'm not sure who wanted to speak.
This is Condor Wiley. And since I was in on the beginning of the whole of raising money to start the program and all, I believe this grant, is, Bob, you can tell me if I'm right, was it not written up for the study of what was necessary out in the rural area, more than actually starting, but wasn't it set up to the point that we were to do a study on it first and then set it up for what we would need?
He was, okay.
I don't have the grant in front of me, but it's...
Wait a second, Bob. Wait for the...
Howard memorized it, I think.
Bob?
Yeah, that is, well, you know, it's been a long time since I read that thing, but...
Yeah, right. But I think it was written that way.
Yeah, so but you are right. That is part of it. But I think it's, what he was trying to do was identify all of the transportation resources.
Oh, sure.
His idea, and he was actually using a model that was studied in Wyoming, where you have more of an ambitious program that that involves the central coordination of transportation resources offered by many different agencies and that kind of thing. And so that was part of it. You know, he was trying to put together a directory, if you will, and he actually did that. I will say, too, that what he charged for his services were pretty nominal. I know that he put a lot of work in that, and I only think he charged about $2,000 for the work he did. But I think he tried to look at the entire state, understand what the transportation needs were, try to identify how a voucher program might be administered,
right.
And so I have to say, you know, definitely the program, I think, demonstrated good efforts and all that. But yes, that was part of that. And
well, I think the grant was written up like that to do a study to see if it was necessary out.
He was trying to not reinvent the wheel, but you know, part of the study was involved in
right.
what kind of projects were in the state.
Okay,
Very good.
What I would like to propose, and I'll let the other commissioners have a brief moment. I would like to see the original grant and any reports that were submitted along the way. And whatever documentation is available, could you make that available to the commissioners?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then we will all review that, and then at the next meeting, we can put that on the agenda and decide if something it should be looked into more with an audit or what the next step might be, if there is any next step. But I don't think without seeing the information and reading the actual grant and looking at the documentation that there's any way to move forward with it at this time. We need to take a quick break and move forward. Are there any other comments by the commissioners before we close?
Let me just say, as we go through the meeting and public comment period, please don't just raise your hand and think that I'll see it and bring it to Julie's attention.
Right.
Please say your name and that you want the, and then that's up to her whether to call on everybody.
Right. And I would like to make sure that everyone gets an opportunity to speak. So if you're raising your hand, I'm not going to call on you. And if you've already had a chance to speak, you know, it's great if there's time, then
somebody
we'll do that.
Somebody just raised a hand.
But
don't raise a hand. Speak up, say your name.
Kendra Slavin. Since there are so many very soft-voiced people in this room, I would suggest that you stand up, because if you're talking over the hips, there's less hair to absorb the sound.
Okay. One quick thing. I do apologize about my statement about the public comment. I'd forgotten that we had always usually let everybody, you know, talk when it's a focused topic. I do think somehow, though, maybe we should think about that sometime as a focused topic where we just allow public comment so people can grill us and whatever they want to do.
Yeah, we don't know.
Or shorten our focus topics because, you know, we got a big crowd here and yet we want people to be able to speak and something we can think about.
Okay.
Well, let's take a break and then we'll come back.
15 minutes.
Do more.